Portage Health Foundation is proud to announce it has more than 40 scholarships available. This includes opportunities for students in any major attending any training facility, college, or university. There are 3 designated scholarships for every public school in Baraga, Houghton, Keweenaw, and Onondaga counties, including a general, health careers, and skilled trade scholarships. The deadline to apply is March 3rd. Learn more and download an application at phfgive.org/scholarships. Again, phfgive.org/scholarships. The deadline is March 3rd.
Good Sunday morning. Once again, welcome to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation, and you can learn more about them and their mission, of course, at phfgive.org. There are a whole bunch of people who want to know what you think about mental health issues and substance issues and things of that nature, and we're going to get into this a little bit deeper in a moment. And they come from this whole layer of organizations. The overarching organization is called Building a Resilient Copper Country. And I have 3 people here who are from diverse organizations. I have Alyssa Sutton in here from UP Kids. I have Gail Plo here from the Western UP Health Department. And I have Michelle Morgan from Keweenaw Support for Healthy Minds. All in the studio, all to talk about this. Welcome to all of you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So, Alyssa, since you sent me the email, you get to go first. And let me start by just kind of running down a little bit about who each of you represent in this coalition. You are with UP Kids, Alyssa. What role does UP Kids play in building a resilient copper country?
Our goal is really to make the community more aware about trauma and the effects that trauma can have on children specifically.
Michelle Morgan, Keweenaw Yes. Support for Healthy Minds. What role does your organization play in building a resilient copper country?
Well, our organization is a volunteer organization that is grassroots from all over the Copper Country, and our whole goal is to help support people who are struggling with mental health conditions or substance use or traumatic experiences, and our role is to also support the resilience of our community.
And Gail Plo from Western UP Health Department, Your presence might be self-explanatory here. You're the health department. If it's healthy, you're probably involved.
I think you summed it up. I think in public health, we're always looking at ways that we can improve the health of individuals and our community as a whole. And we finally understand the very powerful link between mental health, substance use disorder, trauma, and physical health. They're not separate entities. They work. Yeah, one impacts the other.
We have learned a tremendous bit about this over the last few years, and it has, I will confess, been kind of a challenge for me, because I grew up in that era where mental health problems were viewed as personal weaknesses and frailties, and where substance abuse was billed as a moral failure. You were a terrible person, you were a dependent person if you were an alcoholic or if you were a drug addict. This is changing now.
Absolutely, and long overdue. I think that we finally understand, and I keep using the word finally, but there's been so much progress since 2016 when the United States Surgeon General ended the debate once and for all about addiction. Is addiction really a disease? And came out and said this is literally a brain disorder. And, you know, mental health conditions, they go hand in hand. They're not, you can't tease out one and treat one and not the other. Once we understand that it is not some failure on a person's part, this is not an individual weakness, this is a treatable brain disorder, we can make some progress in treating it effectively.
This is chemical.
Absolutely. Well, chemical, physiological, I'm not sure which word you'd want to use, but depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, substance use disorder, they're not a failure. This is not anything to, this has nothing to do with somebody's morals, values, IQ, their abilities, their potential, and we know there are effective treatment modalities, and we've got to move beyond that stigmatizing and the judgment and and really move toward how do we help people? How do we help people? Because there is nobody in your listening audience, in our community, there's nobody I've ever met who is immune from developing a substance use disorder or a mental illness. And the whole point of the HOPE survey is to begin to gather information about what our community needs.
Michelle Morgan from QAnon Support for Healthy Minds. This speaks to what you are trying to deal with in supporting mental health here in the Copper Country. Has it changed your approach as an organization to know that this is more physical than just people being flighty?
Well, I would also clarify that it's not that it's just physical. It's that you cannot distinguish between the brain and the body and experience and genetics and all of those things that we used to ask questions about. Is it nature? Is it nurture? Your experiences translate into your own genetic code that you then transfer down to your children. And, you know, this all gets at the whole idea of stigma and the fact that it is not a personal failure. But we know that there are many people out in the world who still wonder about that, who still sometimes think that maybe, you know, their neighbors should just get, you know, pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And that's part of what we want to know when we're asking the community these questions is, what do you feel about people who abuse substances or misuse substances? What do you think is going on when someone is struggling to actually, function in the community because of a mental illness? What's your opinion about that, and what do you think would help? These are all things that we want to know from all of you. Because the more we understand about where we are at right now, the more we can figure out how to help people in the future.
Alyssa, how does this play in to family relationships that you see through UP Kids? Parents deal with this. Kids sometimes deal with this. We start to see depression developing at an early age. Bipolar disorder sometimes developing at an early age. How do families deal with this, and how do you help them deal with this?
The biggest thing families, in my experience, that really struggle with is the support side of things. So when there's this misunderstanding about what substance use does to a person, does to the family, it trickles into a multitude of things. So the biggest piece that is missing for a lot of these families is that support system and that healthy support system. So if we're able to, as a community, really build on those strengths and build people up instead of maybe tearing them down, it's make or break for these families. The families who have a supportive, healthy system far way better than a family who doesn't have a good support system or maybe has an unhealthy support system.
Talking with Michelle Morgan and Alyssa Suttonen and Gail Plo. They are part of the overall organization that we want to focus on here called Building a Resilient Copper Country. Alyssa, what is Building a Resilient Copper Country?
It's a group we kind of started a few years ago with just the hope of getting more information about trauma to the community and then building steps of what can we do. Now that we know what trauma can do to somebody, how can we help build that resiliency?
Define trauma. What kind of trauma? I mean, are we talking about people, there's physical trauma, there's emotional trauma. What kind of trauma are we looking at?
All of it. All sorts of trauma.
Okay, so if I'm in a car crash and I'm traumatized, that's one kind of trauma. If I grow up in an abusive relationship, that's a whole different kind of trauma. All of it's encompassed here.
Absolutely.
Okay. How do you go about that? Does this Building a Resilient Copper Country have its own programs, or is this just something where you and other organizations meet to try to coordinate efforts?
Myself and other organizations, it's to really pool us all together so that we can work towards the common goal of helping build that resiliency. So we all have our part to play, which is wonderful. And it really takes a community and a team effort to make big change happen, right? I can't do it by myself. The health department can't do it by themselves. We really are a team here. So when we can pool all of our brilliant minds together, we make these awesome things like the Hope Survey, which we're really excited to give to the community and provide information back once we analyze the results.
Gail Plow, you're with the health department, so you kind of have an authority level, perhaps, that some of the other organizations don't as nonprofits. You have some authority behind you. What does it mean to the health department to have these groups working together?
I have to address the authority part of it. I feel like I have to almost give a little giggle because I have very little authority. But I see what you're saying, Todd. As a health department, we are, you know, we're a public health department. We're, you know, we do have some jurisdiction over some of the health related issues. I think for us as a health department, being involved in the BARC coalition, building a resilient copper country, I think it gives us information that we need to adjust some of the programs that we do. You know, the health department is very involved in maternal and child initiatives. You know, our MIHP program, maternal and infant health program, our WIC program. All of the, you know, we have healthy families. We have all kinds of programs that are really geared toward children and families. But we also have a new department called Healthy Connections, which is absolutely focused primarily on substance use disorder treatment. And so this, being involved in BARC, allows us to partner with all the agencies, like Alyssa's saying, and kind of come together as, I mean, literally a team, and take a look at what's missing in our community, what are our strengths, how do we build upon those, and, you know, how do we move this forward? Because we understand the connection between mental and physical health. There's no difference. They're integrated.
So let's talk about this survey that is going to be coming out. It's going to be released on Tuesday as we air this program on Sunday before Valentine's Day. It's coming out on Valentine's Day. Michelle, what's going to be in this survey?
Well, the survey asks a number of questions. First of all, I want to emphasize that it is completely anonymous. It's something that you do not have to identify yourself in any way. It's confidential. And we're hoping that people will just go to the survey and complete it, and we want all walks of life to answer the questions. There are some questions in there that the survey asks about experiences in childhood, both positive and negative, because we know that that affects people's well-being. There are also questions about mental health experiences and experiences in getting help or trying to get help in the area, questions about beliefs about substance use, there are also demographic questions too about what county do you live in and that sort of thing. But really we're wanting to get an overview of what experiences have you had that have affected you and your ability to live your best life. Because we're all in agencies that are trying to help people live their best lives, but things like trauma and mental health problems and substance use sometimes get in the way. And we think that's very common, but we don't know that. And the only way to know that is to ask.
Alyssa, these are hard things for many people to talk about. Do you expect that people will feel comfortable opening up on a survey?
That's really our hope with this survey. And it's really to break down that stigma of mental health. And if we can be vulnerable as a community to show that we are not alone here and a lot of people have these struggles, then it normalizes that across the board. So that hopefully down the road, it doesn't feel so shameful to talk about your mental health or to talk about your substance use. It almost becomes this like, hey, I'm struggling right now. Me too. What can we do together?
And I think that we would find out that there are an awful lot more people who are struggling with these kinds of things than we suspect.
Absolutely.
Because we tend to keep it all quiet, Gail. We don't want to talk about this.
We do that because we have a tendency, we walk around and we kind of compare externally. We look at somebody who's smiling. We look at somebody who's, you know, driving a decent vehicle, and it looks like they have it all together.
They have the perfect life.
Exactly.
They have the perfect marriage. They have the perfect kids. They're never going to have a care in the world, and
right.
I am suffering.
Right. And we compare our, I mean, I always tell people we compare our innards to someone's outside appearance. And we've all been blindsided by some of the celebrity suicides we've seen, you know, and you think, this person had everything. How could they struggle? Because we struggle in silence. And part of the HOPE survey is literally bringing it to light that just like Alyssa said, there are people who suffer in silence, and there are people who are afraid to ask for help. They're afraid of judgment. They're not really even sure where you would go to get help. And let's face it, we live in kind of a desert as far as resources. There's not a whole lot here.
We do.
And I think that has to be addressed. And we can't truly address that until we really understand what our community wants, what they need. And I think the HOPE survey gives people an opportunity to really share openly what they think and what they feel. And their not only their experiences, you know, some of those questions that might be more personal, but on a more, a broader sense where they get a chance to share their opinions about what we need here and what's missing and what works here.
Yeah, I have been open on this show before about the fact that I am bipolar 2, which is the one that basically has no treatment, so not much they can do for me. I'm kind of stuck with it. But one of the things that I have learned about it is that when you have a disorder such as this, it is not you.
Right.
There are people who, yep. you mentioned celebrities.
Right.
Who take their lives and such. Some of them very funny celebrities, comedians, and they say, how can somebody that happy and funny do that? Well, the depression that you experience, the bipolar that you experience, is not part of your personality. It's a funhouse mirror that gets in front of your personality and changes it. It's a wet blanket that sometimes gets thrown over your personality. The person who takes their own life or suffers this way is not sad. The person is affected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think we need to start understanding, is that the fact that you have some type of a disorder, that is not your personality. That's not you.
It's something you suffer with, or you struggle with, or you've overcome, or you're dealing with, whatever your verbiage is. But it's important, because people label themselves. And the labels come with a less than. They literally come with I'm less than someone who doesn't carry this label. You know, I'm alcoholic, or I have a substance use disorder. I am less than someone who doesn't have that part of their personality. And it's not true. It's simply not true. And our hope, literally, we named the HOPE survey HOPE because our hope is, in gathering this information, we can really begin to bring about some of the changes that we know are necessary here.
So, Michelle, what do we hope to do, kind of specifically, once we get these results?
Well, one of the things we want to do is compile the results and then give it back to the community. Because this is not just going to be filed away somewhere for some organization to take data on. We want this to get back to you in the community so that you can understand what our community goes through and wants and needs and believes. And then we, each of the agencies, will also take the information to as a guiding principle for what we need to address. To help people in our community develop and grow and feel better. So it's really to go back to the community and also to guide us in moving forward.
Gail mentioned that there are some holes in the provider net in this area for mental health. It's very difficult to get some assistance for some people. Is this the kind of thing that we could use perhaps to try to build a better net and plug some of those holes?
Absolutely. This is information that I think other organizations and even foundations would be pleased to understand and know better. What is the real need here? What do people really say they want? And to take that as our guide. I want to be clear, though, that we're not just addressing people who have diagnosed mental illnesses or diagnosed substance use disorders. We're also talking about people who simply struggle with anxiety, with depression, because those people need help and support too.
We all go through it from time to time.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We all go through it.
And I think families, it's important too. There are people who do not They cannot relate to symptoms of anxiety. They have not, you know, experienced that. But they've loved someone or someone with a substance use disorder.
Yes.
I don't think there's anybody who's listening to us who has not been touched by substance use disorder or by mental illness or struggles. You know, the struggles we go through as humans. And I thought I could get through an entire interview without bringing up the COVID word, but I'm going to do that. We know COVID has hit everybody. There is nobody who got out of this unscathed. People have lost people. People are struggling with their health. The whole world tilted.
Yeah, well, our whole lives and connections changed. All of a sudden, we didn't see people that we normally saw for weeks at a time, months at a time. We didn't see family members that we normally saw on a regular basis, weeks at a time, months at a time. It tore the fabric of our support to some extent in that regard. And so, yeah, we're all dealing with that a little bit at this point.
And it particularly affected children, too. Let's not forget that.
That was going to be my next question to Alyssa, because you work with families and kids at UP Kids. What kind of effect have you seen amongst those kids? They didn't get out to be with their friends for a couple of years there. They didn't get out to be with their families for a couple of years there. What effects have you seen?
So a lot of effects, even just like connecting with their own peers and connecting with other adults. When you're isolated and you haven't had those opportunities early on, we are seeing it more. And it'll be interesting to see the effects down the line of the children who were kind of in the midst of COVID, especially children who started out, you know, their first year in kindergarten virtual. Those kids really tend to struggle just because they didn't have that quote-unquote formative year of
kindergarten
education.
Is as much about socialization as it is about learning ABCs.
Absolutely.
So, and kids don't bring into this the perspective that we have as adults. We at least can look back and rationalize and say, okay, I'm uncomfortable with what's happening. I wish something different was happening, but I understand why it needs to happen. Kids, they don't have that kind of reference.
Correct.
So what do you hope to accomplish with the results of this survey then at UP Kids?
The hope is really to help, you know, not give the community the knowledge, but and to really break down those stigmas. If we can help our families thrive together as a community, can you imagine the place that we can be in 5-10 years if we offered support to people who are struggling, and not even just those who we are really close and personal with, but just caring as a community as a whole. It's so needed, and it's going to be so beneficial for everybody.
What kind of support are you talking about?
Even just so, like lending a hand and opening up your own vulnerabilities. I think it's easy to see, you know, the house down the street as maybe this troubled house, and oh, God forbid, you know, all these bad things, and we can talk about it, you know, behind their backs. But what are you doing to really help them? You know, do you offer, hey, I can see you're really struggling today. Is there something I can do to help? I mean, just opening up that conversation and just showing people that you care.
And the flip side, I suppose, is that the person who is struggling needs to be open to that suggestion. Because I could see situations where I could see somebody struggling, but oh boy, it's none of my business. I don't want to intrude. They'd be insulted if I were to come up to them and think that they're doing anything less than fine.
Absolutely. And it's like, have you ever been asked, how are you doing today? And if you're really that emotional, and then you just start breaking down because somebody actually noticed that I am not okay today.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
Yeah. So this survey is going to come out on Valentine's Day, just a couple of days after this airs live on Sunday morning. How do people find out about it? How do they access it? How do they fill it out?
So we will have flyers all throughout the community, Houghton, Barragut, Keweenaw, Ontonagon, Gogebic counties. And we're going to have some boxes for paper copies for people to fill out. And then really it's going to be the organizations pushing out the survey link so that we get as many responses as possible.
And the survey link is?
The survey link is KeweenawHopeSurvey.com.
KeweenawHopeSurvey.com. It's a special URL that's been set up just for this, and beginning Tuesday, you can go to that, you can fill this out, and I certainly encourage everyone to do so, because the more information that we have about what the needs are and what the perceptions are, the better we can formulate the response to try to make everybody feel a little better.
Absolutely, yes. And just for a little incentive, we do have multiple gift cards available if you want to share your name. Again, this is completely confidential and anonymous, but if you would like to put your email at the end of the survey, you will be entered in for a drawing.
KeweenawHopeSurvey.com. That's the place you want to go beginning
right.
Tuesday.
And the flyers will include a QR code for folks like me who like to just take a quick picture of that, and that will take them directly to the survey.
It's like being transported in Star Trek.
I love it. Yep.
All right, Michelle Morgan and Alyssa Suttonen and Gail Plow, thank you for coming in. Good luck with this. And when you get things done, will you get in touch with me so maybe we can take a look at the results on the program?
Absolutely.
We'd love to.
We will do that.
Copper Country Today continues in a moment.